Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio. I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please. With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up and deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Live in downtown St. Louis in the Lumiere Place Poker Room, I'm Paul Harris. A little bit after 7 o'clock in St. Louis, that would make it a little bit after 2 in the morning in Monte Carlo, in Monaco, where Dennis Phillips is and has been for a couple of days to play in the EPT Grand Final. That's the European Poker Tour Grand Final. Let's see if we can hook up with him in his hotel there. Dennis, are you there?
I am right here, Paul. How's it going?
It's going very well. Before we talk about your day in the poker room there, tell me about Monte Carlo, one of these legendary gambling towns that we've known about ever since James Bond started playing Baccarat there 45 years ago. What's it like?
It's a little bit unreal. I had no idea what to expect. Obviously, I've never been to Monaco or any place like this. We arrived yesterday. It was cold and rainy and all this other. Well, it was 2 days ago, I guess. And didn't know for sure what we were getting into. And then I woke yesterday and walked outside, and it was like, oh, my gosh. The view here is spectacular. The people are friendly. It's opulence everywhere on these different hotels and that. I'm a little out of my element, to be truthful.
Yeah? Do you have to wear a tuxedo when you go play there?
You do not. Although I'll tell you what, the people from the waiters on down are dressed to the nines here in some of these places. But that is a rule that has been changed in recent years. You do not have to wear a suit coat now when you go to the casino. And you did used to.
Are you allowed to wear your Cardinals hat?
I am wearing it, and they haven't stopped me, that's for sure. Haven't you seen what these Cardinals are doing lately? Future world champions.
Say that again?
I said future world champions with the Cardinals here. They can't stop that.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Absolutely. All right, let's talk about your play. Today was day 1A. There'll be two first days because they had close to 400 people in it today. The buy-in for this, is it 10,000 euros? Is that right?
It's 10,000 euros plus 600 euros for the cost. So it's actually a little over $14,000 U.S.
Okay. And when you were playing today, how was it for you? You start out with 30,000 in chips. I like this new trend, by the way. The WSOP is going to do this as well, where you get triple your buy-in in chips, so you really get to play some deep stack poker. How was day 1A for you?
Well, this whole structure was built for my type of a game. It was a very deep stack with the chips. The rounds right now are 60 minutes. On day two, they go to 75 minutes. You're allowed to actually play poker. It's not this shove fest in that you get into some of the smaller tournaments. And I loved it. There were celebrities on every table. They started out putting the half of the pros from Team Poker Stars on the stage. And then about 5 minutes before it started, they opened up the curtain to the stage. They'd had dry ice here, so we walked out from among the smoke there and mingled out in among the other tables with everybody.
Very, very nice.
Grand entrance.
I assume that Raymer's there and Moneymaker and Barry and the rest of your fellow Team Poker Stars pros?
30 of the 32 Team Poker Stars are here. Half of them played today. Half of them will play tomorrow. Plus, there's an assortment of other very, very well-known poker pros from the other sites. So, yeah, it's a who's who over here, no doubt about it.
I also understand that our old St. Louis friend and big-time international superstar, Nelly, is there. Have you run into him?
I didn't run into him. He is here. We kind of waved each other and things like that, so he's around. But I have not had a chance to talk to him or anything.
All right.
It was kind of interesting. Sorry, a little side thing. The first table I sat down at, we had a gentleman from Indiana there, about a 20-year-old that had qualified online with his dad. And I ended up knocking him out after a couple of hours. He and his dad came up to me on break and said, "Do you realize you're not going to be on the front page of the Indiana paper tomorrow?" said, why? He said, well, because I'm the only one from Indiana that made it here, and you knocked me out, and we're going to take your picture and put it on there.
Very nice.
I started laughing. Oh, he's a nice guy. Good player, too. He's just one of those, coolers. Didn't misplay at all. It just happened.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about your play today. As I said, you started out with 30,000 in chips, and I read online that you ended up with about 70K. Tell me how you got there and how the day went.
I had several interesting hands. I think I played very well, actually. Actually zoomed up over 100,000 in one time and then got cold decked on a couple of hands that brought me back down to 70. But I think the average is only in the mid-50s, so I should be in pretty good shape chip-wise.
Nice.
I can tell you about one of the early hands if you want to hear it.
Absolutely.
All righty. Actually, under the gun, right next to the blinds, I had an ace-five of spades, a suited ace. I went ahead and raised. The blinds at this time were 75 and 150. I made it 450. Folded around to the button, who re-raised me up to 1,200. Small blind folded, big blind smooth called. I put about 3,000 in the pot, so my other 750 I threw in there and figured we'd see a flop on it. So flop comes out with two spades. It's three small cards, but two spades on it. Who was the big blind? Checks again. I bet. At this time, I think it was about 2,500, I bet. Button calls. Smooth call again by the big blind on it. Turn card comes a jack. Big blind checks again. This time, I bet out about 5,000. The guy who was the button goes into the tank for a minute and then finally folds it. Smooth call again by the big blind. Now, obviously, I was trying to take it down on the turn.
Yep.
River is a spade. I now have the nuts. There's no straight. Mm-hmm. There's nothing else out there. There's no pairs. I have the absolute best possible hand with my ace of spades.
So you've been floating the whole way, and you get there on the river.
I absolutely did. I tried to take it down on the flop. I tried to take it down on the turn. I couldn't get anything going. Anyhow, he checks again. I bet 7,300 on the river, which at this time, you know, we started with 30,000, and it's very early in the game, is a big chunk of it. I made a $5,000 bet. I made a $2,500 bet. I'd called a $1,200 bet. Now I made 7,300 more on the river. Guy just smooth calls again. So he smooth called, pre-flop, flop, turn, and river. Never raised once. Turned over pocket aces right there on it, which I had beat.
You know, of course,
me getting lucky.
That is exactly one of the lessons that we've talked about on this show, about people who are slow playing aces, pre-flop or on the flop or on the turn or on the river, and getting themselves into trouble exactly like that. Joe McGowan, who is the poker coach, is also on the line. Let me bring Joe in here while we're trying to reconnect with Dennis. Joe, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, picking it up, Paul. I'm surprised that the other opponent that had the aces didn't raise on the turn, aren't you?
Yes.
I mean, there's so much in the pot already, and likely he has the best hand. And just in case Dennis is on the common betting on the draw, you know, make Dennis pay for it. So really, that guy played the hand terribly. You know, he could have put Dennis to a tough decision, and likely Dennis could have had pocket queens or just top pair. I think Dennis said it came a jack high. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, Dennis could have had ace jack. You know, Dennis could have had pocket queens. Certainly, you got to figure that you're good there, but there's draws out there. It's a draw-heavy board at this point. You know, I'd make Dennis pay. And, you know, I'd love to get it all in there with aces. You know, I'd hope now, okay, my trap worked. Dennis has been betting the whole way. Dennis is pretty aggressive. Maybe Dennis has queens, and he's willing to go broke with this hand if I raise on the turn. You know, maybe Dennis has pocket jacks or pocket tens and won't believe that I have a hand at this point and will pay me off. He really should have raised the turn and put Dennis to a tough decision, which Dennis would have had. You know, I don't know if Dennis could call on the turn there with just one card to come, not two. A lot of players with a flush draw like to have two cards to come, you know, not just one, getting a bad price. So to Dennis's fortune, you know, the guy played the hand, gambled there early on in a tournament for a lot of chips and lost a big pot. So kudos to Dennis and kind of a rough play by the guy with the aces.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that hand, and Dennis is back with us live from Monte Carlo. I'm Paul Harris in downtown St. Louis with Joe McGowan, the poker coach, on the phone, and Dennis at the EPT. But the amazing thing about that is pre-flop, Dennis raises it, the button three bets it, and the big blind doesn't come over the top with his aces. I mean, even if you are thinking of slow playing it, you don't want to be slow playing it against two opponents.
Well, early on in a tournament, you know, I think you could pop it there. I don't really blame him for just calling the, you know, because he really gives away his hand, Paul. You know, if he four bets it there, he really gives away his hand that he has aces or kings. And it's easy for the other guys to get away with it. By just calling, he disguises his hand. The real thing for me is I think the turn, you know, or maybe even the flop. Once Dennis bets out and the other guy just calls, now with so much in there, why not go ahead and put a little pressure on it? Now you float it all the way. He floats that all the way to the turn and doesn't pop it. You know, he really, you know, put himself out there and opened himself up to two pair and all the draws and the one that got there and ends up losing a big pot. So he certainly could have raised the flop. He unquestionably should have probably raised, you know, pre-flop like you said, or the flop. I said that backwards. But without a doubt, in my view, he should have raised the turn.
Dennis, did you say that the jack came on the turn? Because at that point, if you've been betting it all the way, I'm not sure that with my aces I'm going to be putting all of my stack in there, because it's entirely possible that you've got a set of jacks there, especially since you raised it pre-flop and then called down three bets.
Yeah, but look at it this way, though, Paul. He never made a single raise the entire time.
Yeah.
The problem you have with this is he ended up throwing at least the amount of money they would have made on a raise, and if not more, by the end of it.
Yep.
So if you're going to go ahead and call it on the turn and call it on the river, why not throw the bet out there, put some pressure on your opponent, and find out where you're at?
Yeah.
I can't agree more. I totally agree, Dennis.
I just don't understand it, how you can and smooth call on all four levels.
All right, well, that was one hand that you played really well today. Tell us about another hand that maybe somebody outplayed you on, because we can't just have Dennis get a great job stories.
Yes, a gentleman definitely outplayed me totally on a hand on it. Well, let's see if I can get this right. I looked down at a pocket pair, a middle pocket pair. At this time, I had nines in early position. And, again, I was trying to play a little small ball, didn't want a big pot or anything like that on it. So I just limped in. Gentleman later on, and down there about three positions beyond me, raised it pre-flop. This is on 3-6, so he 3X'd it probably somewhere in that neighborhood, made a, you know, like a $1,700 bet. The big blind called him. I went ahead and called him, put a nice amount in the pot, and I figured we'll see the flop on it. A 3-5-7 was on the flop on it. All right? And I'm sitting with a pocket nine. I go ahead and bet out. Well, the first guy checked, the other guy that had limped in with me. I bet out. He smooth called me on the bet. The other gentleman folded on it. So now we've got even a bigger amount in the pot on this thing on it. Turn card comes, and I'm a little suspicious from the smooth call out there. So I check, and he checks. Now the river shows up, and the river's a queen. So now there's a larger one out there. I debate for a minute on it, and I checked it again. He put out, there's about 20,000 in the pot right now. He bet out, I think it was around 6,500, a third of the pot, not quite, somewhere in that area. Not a little over the pot it would have been then on that. So I cry call it, thinking, did he catch his queen? Did I totally misplay this hand? Gentleman had a 4-6. He flopped a perfect straight.
Nice.
Well, what it was, and this is why I got a respect for it, he was in position to steal pre-flop, and he made the bet trying to take the pot down, get through blinds and addies. He was unlucky enough to have two people go ahead and call him, but then he catches the perfect flop. And so, of course, nobody can put him on a 4-6, and he milked me for it. Very well.
I think I might have
totally
had to call on the river as well for 6,500. You know, when you say who outplayed you, I think you got to give him credit for playing the hand well, making a perfect size bet. Now, if he bets more there,
absolutely,
you probably can fold. He bets 6,500 into that size pot. It's so likely that he's bluffing there because it went, you know, you guys checked the turn, you know, and he played good there by checking the turn. Yeah. So, you know, I think he made the perfect size bet in the river, and I think most players would have had to cry call there. You could make a case you could throw it away, but I think I would have called to look him up. You know, it's too likely he could have had ace-jack, ace-king, a lot of hands that you can beat with the pocket nines that he's bluffing with.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. In the back of my mind, I'm thinking he may have ace-queen, and he caught on the river, and unlucky me, but I got to call it anyhow. And then he turns over the 4-6, and I go, oh, did he just – he totally outplayed me.
Right.
Yeah. You know, the nice thing about that is you've got the nines in early position, and you limped, giving him the opportunity in late position to try a steal with you know, two rags in his hand, and then it turns out that he's got two other callers in there, and nobody has re-raised him. So, of course, he's going to be happy to take a look at a flop. And then when the perfect flop comes for him with the 7-5-3, and so he's flopped the joint there, it's the best of all possible worlds for him. I like that play a lot because you limped.
Yep. Now, see, the other part of it, if he and I were the two only in that, in other words, he makes the raise, everybody folds back to me, then with my nines, I'm liable to repop it there. But
yep.
With the third person in, then that worries me and repopping it. So I didn't. I just went ahead and smooth called.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you did is you checked the turn, right, Dennis? Then you checked the river.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and you checked the river so that you can just check, cry, call, you know, because he'll either bluff and, you know, you can then call and win a nice pot, or hopefully he does bet small and you can call and just find out where you are there and, you know, the hand's over. So, you know, by checking twice, you're going to induce a lot of bluffs there too.
Speaking of bluffing, speaking of bluffing, guys, we've got a guy who's got quite a reputation for bluffing and also for talking at the table. Jamie Gold is coming up next when we return here to the Lumiere Place Final Table. I'm Paul Harris in St. Louis. Dennis Phillips is in Monte Carlo. Joe McGowan is the poker coach who joins us every week. And this portion of the show is brought to you by PokerStars, the website where Dennis plays and where most of the people who are at the EPT Grand Final play. They got there either through satellites online or they are members of Team PokerStars Pro, just like Dennis. Although, Dennis, I was just looking and I see a couple of your fellow Team PokerStars Pros, like Barry Greenstein and Greg Raymer, got knocked out on day 1A today.
Makes no difference how good a player you are. You can still get the wrong cards or get cold decked or anything. So,
Is anybody from PokerStars.tv there? Are they catching any of your action?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, the one with Ace 5 of Spades was taped. Hopefully it'll be on the air here sometime in the next 24 hours, be on the website if you go to it.
You can go there and take a look at some of the action from the EPT on PokerStars.tv, or if you want to start playing online, PokerStars.net is the website where you can download the software and jump in to the world's largest online poker room. PokerStars is one of the proud sponsors of the Lumiere Place Final Table, which continues with Jamie Gold next on 5-9 of the Fan KFNS.
In just 2 short years, World Series of Poker champ Dennis Phillips has earned over $4.5 million because Dennis knows when to hold a great deal. That's why Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room is his game room superstore. Hurry to Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room now for factory closeout deals on poker tables, craps tables, blackjack tables, 3-in-1 casino tables, and accessories. Plus, get Amini's closeout deals on complete game room packages, sale priced from just $1,995. Right now, Brunswick Billiard Game Room Suites are thousands off, and American-made pool tables are just $995. Hurry to Amini's now for blowout deals on leather sectionals, area rugs, bars, bar stools, video arcade games, and home theater seating. Hold your deal interest-free with 2-year layaway. So take a tip from Dennis. Get your great deal today at Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room, Highway 40 and Boone's Crossing in Chesterfield Valley, the home of the Copper Dome Amini's.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
You're at the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
I'm downtown St. Louis at the Lumiere Place Poker Room, and Dennis is in his hotel room in Monte Carlo, Monaco, where he's been playing on day 1A of the European Poker Tour's Grand Final. A few weeks ago, Dennis and I were in Las Vegas, last weekend of March, for the Dream Team Poker event, where I once again ran into Jamie Gold, whose girlfriend Ashley knocked me out of the event, and then the two of them and their third colleague went on to win the team portion of that event. And then a couple weeks later, I get a text message from a friend of mine who says, hey, I was just walking into a steakhouse here in St. Louis, and I saw Jamie Gold. Why don't you call him and have him stick around and do the show? And so I called Jamie, and he said, no, I'm not in St. Louis. As a matter of fact, I'm about to go to bed because I got to get up in the morning and get on a plane to Ireland to play in the Irish Open. But when I come back from that, I promise I'll do the show. So here he is. Hi, Jamie. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing very well. And it's a good thing you did go to Ireland because I understand you made the final table at the Irish Open.
And, you know, it wasn't a huge tournament, but yeah, I came in sixth in the little tournament that they had there, and, you know, it was my own fault. I really played terribly on the second day, but it was so much fun. You're actually allowed to speak about the contents of your hand. When your head's up, you can say anything you want there, which is really my style.
Yes, it is. So were you doing that a lot?
I was, yeah. I had a blast. So much fun.
You know, a friend of mine who just played in a Venetian event a couple weeks ago in their deep stack thing told me that twice at his table, players had to be warned about the Jamie Gold rule. No talking when your head's up at the end of a hand.
It's very odd. I mean, to me, you might as well be playing on the internet. I never insult anybody. I'm never mean to anybody or rude to anybody. I just believe that it's a psychological game. You know, Danny Negreanu has been very vocal, and he's on the board, you know, in trying to change the rules for the World Series, and it almost got changed this year. There was a rumor going around that they finally made it back to the way that we all believe that poker should be. I mean, you should be able to flash a card. Any information you want to give away, you should be able to be free to give away. Otherwise, just play at home on the internet if you don't want to speak.
And the psychology of the game has always been a part of what you do, and what I find most interesting about that is that when you won the main event 3 years ago, it was your talking to the other players that convinced them to either lay cards down or make bad calls at exactly the right time. When you went into the main event that year, was that the strategy that you had planned from day one?
Completely, yeah. I had a little coaching from Johnny Chan, and he had seen me winning a lot of really small tournaments around L.A., you know, for 20 grand, 50 grand, 70 grand, you know, nothing huge, but there seemed to be a lot of the best players were spending a lot of time in the card clubs in L.A. at that point, and he felt that the reason why I was so successful at that time was based on my table talk. I wasn't the best poker player in the world by any stretch, but I had an ability to talk people in and out of their hands, and most people weren't really used to it, and so he convinced me to go and give a shot at the World Series, and that's really, it had to have been what did it for me.
Has that backfired on you at the table? I mean, with players getting really, really, really upset with you?
Oh, no, not at all. No, you know, because I don't do it in a mean way. You know, I'm a very social person. I make a lot of friends when I play poker. And, you know, people may not like me for whatever reason. But in general, people that I've met and that I've played with don't seem to have a problem with me because I'm not rude about it. You know, I'm just being competitive. And a lot of people find it very fun, especially when they're not in the hand. They think it's a blast. You know, they think it's really interesting and a lot of fun to watch. I do it in all of the cash games that I play, and we have a lot of fun doing that. And so, you know, it seems that no, people don't get too upset about it. It's all in the spirit of the game.
You know, I can testify to how much fun it is to do that in a cash game because you and I both played in a game at the Hard Rock in Las Vegas. I think it was October because it was during the baseball playoffs, and you were interested in watching the Dodgers and playing in a little 2-5 game. And I heard you were there, and when I went down there, I assumed you'd be playing 5-10 or something bigger, and I wanted to play with you. And I got there, and I see you're in the 2-5 game, so I sat down and I played, and you and I talked for quite a bit of the time. We were both there for about 3 or 4 hours. And I asked you how much your strategy had changed. And here we are again. It's a table full of people trying to take each other's money. And you actually said, people always think I'm bluffing, and I never bluff anymore. And, Jamie, that night I saw people who didn't believe you when you said that, thought you were bluffing the whole time, and gave you their money over and over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I never bluff anymore. I don't want to go on record as saying that because I do still bluff a lot. But in cash games, I don't bluff anywhere near as people think I do. And you're right. When I have the nuts, people give me all of their money. It's really kind of crazy.
Yeah, you were essentially running over the table that night by just playing fairly straight poker. I mean, you were playing some great hands and you were playing them really well, but the way you were playing and talking about your game out loud to the other people who were there, I was just sitting back and laughing. Of course, I was having a good night too, as you may recall. But
you did very well.
Thank you. That was a lot of fun for me. I think we've got Dennis back on the line.
Oh, great! Hey, Dennis.
Hey, how's it going, Jamie?
Oh, it's going great. It's good to talk to you. How's Monte Carlo?
It's pretty awesome over here. I apologize about the communication with the phone. For some reason or other, we can talk for about 5 minutes, and all of a sudden I'm talking to thin air. But good to have you on.
Yeah, no, it's my pleasure. I wish I was in Monte Carlo. I was planning on being out there, and then all this business came up, and I wasn't able to go. But I really look forward to maybe next year, and I've heard it's beautiful, and we were going to make a trip out of it, Ashley and I, and it didn't work out, and so I'm kind of sad. I wish I was there.
Do a rain check. Maybe we can both come over here next year. How's that?
Oh, absolutely. But I'll see you. I'll definitely see you at the World Series. I'll be out there. At the end of May, and I'll probably be there pretty much straight through until the beginning of July.
You know, while I have you both here, I want to ask you about international poker playing. As an American who, you both have gone to the final table of a main event, Dennis coming in third and Jamie winning it. But Dennis has been traveling to Latin America and is now in Monaco and has played in London. You have traveled all over the world, Jamie, and played in all sorts of places, including Ireland most recently. So, Jamie, I'll start with you, and then Dennis can jump in here on how it's different, or if it is different, playing against players from Europe, Asia, Latin America, et cetera.
Oh, I think it's completely different. For example, in Ireland, they're extremely loose. They have no, problem putting all their chips in knowing that they're way behind. I mean, they'll call you when they're way behind. They really like to gamble. And I find that a little bit in the UK, I think because they're so used to playing Omaha. And so you're never that far behind in Omaha. And so I found that there's a lot more gamble outside of the United States, where I think players are just too educated and too good. Not that the United States players are so much better. They're too solid, and so they're much more conservative, which in the long run, is pretty much the way that, I feel like you probably have to play. Most people have to play. My style doesn't really tend to that, but in general, the solid game is the winning game in Texas Hold'em. And so I find that Europeans seem to gamble a lot more and have a lot more play in them. But also the game is a little newer to them. Poker's not newer, but the game of Texas Hold'em is newer to them. And so I think it's the same thing as maybe in America 10 years ago, where there was a great excitement and there was a lot of gamble and there was a lot of energy around it. And now I feel like, after everybody's read every book out there and, you can train online with all these sites and, it's almost every bit of information is available to people if they want it. So it's much more competitive, I find, much tougher to find a soft game in America than it is in Europe. But also maybe it's just me. Everybody just, feels like they want to take my money. I don't know.
How is it for you, Dennis?
Well, it is a little bit different. I'll have to admit that. And it's a little different in Europe than it is even in Latin America.
Tell me what it's like. I've never been to Latin America to play poker. Tell me what it's like.
Aces is more. Preflop getting away from an ace down there was difficult for these people. You come here and they seem to value that some of the suited cards more and the way they're playing. Maybe I just had it at this table, but that's the way it seemed to be. And they are definitely looser than you'll find the average cash game in the U.S. Is it the influx from the internet? Is it the idea that everybody teaches them you have to be aggressive? I don't know. I don't know exactly what causes it, but they're definitely a little looser, a little more aggressive, and willing to play a wider range of hands.
Jamie was asking what it's like to play in Latin America.
A little bit different. Obviously, you got the language barrier and everything like that, but people are very friendly down there, and they tend to play a little bit more, I don't want to say like a novice, but they tend to think that they have to be aggressive. They have to be forcing the play down there. And you're able to sit back and take advantage of that in many cases. I played the cash game down there and did very, very well. Found out that my jacks were no good against the 6-9 offsuit and hands like that, but it was a little bit different, yeah. Love losing jacks to a 6-9 offsuit, but whatever.
Yeah, but that's the Lumiere action place that you want. That's the game you want.
This is the Lumiere place absolutely. Final table. On 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, Paul Harris in downtown St. Louis. We've got Jamie Gold on the phone, and Dennis is live from the EPT Grand Final in Monte Carlo in Monaco. Jamie, let's talk a little bit about you on TV. Last week, NBC reran the Poker After Dark shows that you were on, where you got heads up with Mike Sexton at the end. And you seemed to be in awe of the fact that you were playing poker against Mike Sexton. Tell me about that.
Yeah, when I was first starting to play poker, I was a big fan of, that to me is when the World Poker Tour was kind of, at its best and really exciting. And, that was the kind of the beginning of poker on TV. Of course, World Series came first and, but for me, regularly every week on TV, you could count on watching this World Poker Tour. And so Mike Sexton was kind of larger than life to me, and I had never really had the opportunity to play with him. And so it was amazing because I had always dreamed about, maybe making one of those final tables at the World Poker Tour. And the next thing my first big event, I win the World Series, and then I'm off to playing against Mike Sexton. And it was pretty amazing. I don't know if I was more in shock of playing against him, heads up, or that I had no crush and he caught the miracle on the river there against me. I don't know.
Yeah, he hit the boat on the river and took you down. But when you were, I don't know how much of the Poker After Dark action we actually get to see. How long did you guys actually play heads up, and how was he as a player?
I think they said it was their longest heads up match. I think we went for hours. They don't show it all. They can't possibly, but they show you a good amount of it. Mike is really solid. Very solid player. He's not easy to beat. He's just got so much experience. Experience counts for a lot. I give a lot of credit to all of these young kids who have played on the internet because they play so many hands. It's not, you can't anything away from them because they have just as much experience. It's like I've been playing now, I guess, for almost 10 years, and a lot of these kids who've been playing for two or three have at least as much or more experience than I do because they play eight tables at a time, 24 hours a day. And so
yeah.
I kind of came up in the live game. I think the one thing that maybe I have a little advantage for some of the internet players, some of them are just so good, I don't even know what to say, but I have a little advantage over some of them in that I feel like I can read people maybe a little better than they can because they don't play live. And if you don't play live, there's definitely something missing when you're in a live tournament. So I think I have a little bit of a skill, in that way. But back to Mike Sexton, I had absolute blast, and I was in awe of him. And he's also such a gentleman and a kind, generous human being. I do a lot of charity events, and he's one of the people that has just, never said no, always, willing to help and donate and support. And he's just a great guy. He's been very fortunate. He was there in the beginning with Party Poker, and, You know, I know he had a nice piece of that company, and they went public for $16 billion. So he's got to be a pretty comfortable guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it's, you know, we all made our money differently in poker, but, you know, it's just, you know, it's nice to see the people that are genuinely kind. And, you know, poker attracts a wide variety of people. There are a lot of angry people. There are a lot of bitter people. But there are some extremely kind and generous and wonderful people. So, you know, it's a nice mix, and you just have to be careful. I've encountered them all, and I've learned my lesson, you know, and who I can trust. And, you know, people at one time, I think, you know, thought I might be one of those people, and then they realized the truth, and that not only had I never screwed anybody, but I've been incredibly generous to people. And, you know, I just feel like, you know, I'm very lucky to be in, you know, I'm playing this great game, and I feel like it's a game I can play for the rest of my life. It's beautiful, and it'll always be there. And that's why I missed Monaco this year. You know, I had other opportunities to do things that, you know, weren't all about poker. And I don't know how often, you know, my life, I don't know how long people are going to care about poker players and all the opportunities that we're getting right now as somewhat recognizable poker players. And so I want to take advantage of that as much as I can. And I know that poker will always be there. So I can always sit back and play some poker, but I can always go to Monaco. I don't know that I'm always going to be able to do some of the other business opportunities that I have right now.
I think Dennis probably feels the same way, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. This has opened up so many doors for me, and I've had so much fun with it. Working again with a variety of charities, meeting a lot of people I never would have gotten to meet before. Yeah, the doors are definitely open, and I'm trying to take advantage of it.
While I have you here, Jamie, I can't let you go without talking a little bit about high-stakes poker, because you talk about playing against Mike Sexton and experience counting. You sat down there with some guys who I think combined had about 800 years of poker experience between them, and a couple of young guns as well. I know that you've been on high-stakes poker a couple of times, but tell me about that first time walking into that suite and looking over and, holy cow, there's Doyle Brunson, and I can't remember who else was sitting at the table with you that first time, but tell me a little bit about what that was like from your perspective.
Yeah, I was definitely nervous. It's odd, you know, I wasn't intimidated because I was used to, I came up in the poker world at, you know, some of the toughest card rooms in the world. I mean, in the Commerce and Bicycle and Hustler Casino, most of the best players in the world, in my opinion, the, you know, Phil Ivey, Phil Hellmuth, Barry Greenstein, Danny Negreanu, Sammy Farha, you know, Johnny Chan, all of them were there. And so I actually, you know, crazy or not, I decided that I wanted to play against the best in the world when I first started out. And I, you know, I definitely took my lumps, and I lost a good deal of money in the beginning, and then I started winning it back, and I probably, you know, became like a break-even player. But the experience that I got was incredible and invaluable, and I'm really glad that I did, so that when I walked into the room at the first time playing against Danny Negreanu, Mike Mattis, Doyle Brunson, I've been there before, but I'd never done it on television, and so I was very nervous, and I didn't play my game properly, and I, you know, played kind of passively, and I didn't do very well, and now I realize, you know, I think I lost $60,000. Now it seems like nothing. You know, I mean, $60,000 in the range of it is a lot of money, but in the scope of things, you know, the next time I went on, I won $420,000, and then the next day I went on, I lost $400,000. So I'm about a $40,000 loser in my three times on high stakes. But, you know, I don't regret it. I had the greatest time. It was a wonderful experience. This season, I've got two of my friends on the show, Sam Simon and Nick Cassavetes, who are not poker players. They're great poker players, but, you know, Nick is a Hollywood actor, writer, director, and Sam Simon created The Simpsons and wrote for Cheers and Taxi. And, you know, they're Hollywood guys, and they're my friends outside of poker. And I'm so glad that they had an opportunity to play this year, and it was wonderful to watch them. And I think I may have even had a better time watching them than I did myself playing. And so I'll probably play again next season, but I was really happy to give them the opportunity. You know, I helped them get on the show, and I was really excited for them to play.
That's great. Now, Jamie, I want to ask you about one high-stakes poker hand, and it's not the one with Sammy Farha, which I know you've talked about ad nauseum. Instead, it's a hand where both you and Doyle were in it, and you both made spade flushes. Yours was 9 high. His was 10 high. I think that the ace, king, and jack of spades were on the board at the time. So essentially, you've got the second nuts, and he's got the third nuts. And you bet, and he raised, and he you bet, he raised, you re-raised him, and he laid his hand down with the best hand. I read an interview with him about that hand in which he said, I don't know if Jamie had a better hand than I did there or not, but he was acting like he did, and I had absolutely no doubt that he would have put his entire stack in there with whatever he had, and I just didn't want to risk my entire stack there. Do you remember the hand that I'm talking about, and does any of that make sense?
I do, and you know, Doyle is being completely straight. You know, there are some players who try to cover their butts, like, you know, Phil Hellmuth sometimes will say, oh, I knew what he had, and you know, and sometimes they're not exactly telling you it straight. Doyle Brunson is telling it to you straight. He put a perfect read on me, which was right. I thought I had the nuts. There's no way I thought that he had a flush. You know what I mean? And how could I? You know, when you have the second nut flush, you never put anybody on the nut flush. You know, unless it's a 4-card flush. But when it's a 3-card flush, you just don't do that. I mean, you know, you have to be willing to go with your. And I would have put my whole stack in there. And so his read was perfect. Very lucky for me that he did have a perfect read. It was the right read. You know, the wrong move. But he was right. I absolutely thought I had the nuts.
That was an amazing hand. All right, before I let you go, it's plug time. So, Jamie, I know you're always wearing your Buzz Nation hat and you're involved in all sorts of things. Anything you want to plug before we go here?
I'm hosting the celebrity charity event at the Cannes Film Festival with Edward Norton from Rounders.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on May 17th in Cannes. So if anybody from Monaco... like Dennis wants to stay a little extra time and come over to Nice and play with us in France, we'd love to have him.
And then what are your plans for the World Series this year?
Force me to stay 3 weeks in Monaco.
Just winning it. No, I'm kidding. I'm going to play. The first event is the surviving, I think there's 20 main event champions that are still alive. And so they're having a tournament of main event champions. So that should be fun. I got to go out there for that, and that's going to be the first one that I play. And then I'll play as many as I wait. I'm day to day. You know, there are some days I feel like playing, and some days I don't. When my head's into that playing, when it's not, I don't. So I could play 15 tournaments, or I could, like last year, I think I only played maybe 4. So it just depends on how I feel. You know, you might see me playing there every day. You might not see me for 3 weeks. It's all about where my head's at.
Dennis, any final words for Jamie?
Well, none, except I'm sure we're going to run into each other a number of times from now, and hopefully you won't take me out too many times. How's that?
Well, I wish you well in Monaco, and I hope you take it down.
It's going to be fun over here, that's for sure.
Jamie, thank you so much for your time today. We really had a blast talking to you, and we look forward to seeing you out there during the World Series. We'll be doing a couple of shows from out there. Maybe we'll grab you again.
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you.
Jamie Gold joining us here at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. We also podcast this show on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. And we do have international listeners who download this podcast either through iTunes or directly from the website. And if you're going to be in Nice next month, look Jamie up for that big event. We're going to take a break and then come back with more with the poker coach, Joe McGowan, talking about a big weekend he had at the Venetian in their Deep Stack event. This portion of the Lumiere Place Final Table is brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance, a nonprofit membership organization full of online and offline players from around the world. And I actually saw an interesting piece of news in just the last couple of days about Barney Frank, the congressman from Massachusetts, who's chairman of the House Financial Services Committee, who is looking into reintroducing an online gaming bill that he introduced last year, and he got 48 co-sponsors. This year, he may be able to get even more to do away with the UIGEA. That's the law that's making it difficult for online poker players. And listen to this number. PricewaterhouseCoopers estimates that the potential gain to the U.S. federal government in tax revenues by repealing the UIGEA would be just under $52 billion. That would put a lot of money back in the bailout coffers of this country and back in the taxpayers' pockets as well. So that's an even better reason to support the PPA, which is lobbying on your behalf as a poker player. The Poker Players Alliance is online at ppa.org. Go to that website and find out more. We're back with more of the Lumiere Plays Final Table right after this.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Put on your sunglasses, stack up your chips, and hide those tails.
Yes, he's going all in, and Chan has him. Johnny Chan, the master.
You're at the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And before we move on to anything else, I got to play another piece of poker audio. Dennis, you were already flying to Monaco on Sunday night when this aired on NBC, but you may know that Annie Duke is on the Celebrity Apprentice. Joan Rivers is also on there on the other team. Joan's daughter Melissa was on Annie's team, and it came down to Annie and Melissa and their teammate, Brandi Roderick, the former Playboy playmate, sitting in the boardroom with Donald Trump. Trump fired Melissa, who went out in a huff, absolutely out of her mind, and Joan, who's on the other team, went ballistic as well and started yelling at Annie Duke. Jason, roll that for me.
And your people, you give money with blood on it. I met your people in Vegas for 40 years. None of them have last names. None of them. They have cash fulls of... You're a poker player. A poker player. That's awesome. Beyond white trash.
Poker players are the most awesome people in the world.
Poker players are trash, darling. Trash.
There you go. We're trash, guys. We're totally trash.
Well, I had so much respect for her on the red carpet already. You know, this just adds to it.
I agree 100%. All right, let's bring the poker coach, Joe McGowan, back in here. Joe, you're a member of the trash community, too. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much, Paul. I'm happy to be a member of the trash.
Joe made the final table at the main event of the Venetian Deep Stack Poker Tournament this past weekend. Congratulations on that for your fifth-place finish. While you were doing so well, you were texting me, and at one point you told me that you had taken a hit and you were the short stack around eight people left, and still you managed to hold on until there were five left. And this is something that both Joe and Dennis have gotten really, really good at. I saw Dennis do this so many times in tournaments here in St. Louis. Get low on chips, but never panic, and stick around and continue playing your game. Joe, tell me a little bit about how you do that and how you did that this weekend.
Well, I'm probably an expert at it because I never have any chips. You know, Dennis many times is the chip leader, you know, has chips and plays better than me. I always limp along and I'm short. To tell the truth, when it was 16 players, I can go over a hand that I'd love to talk about. I think it was 16 players or so. I was definitely below average. I had a player to my right who had been raising any pot that wasn't limped in or unraised, and pots that were limped in or raised in front of him, he would re-raise, and he was the chip leader. So it was the type of thing I was waiting, Paul. I was waiting. I was being patient. Certainly, I want to make a move at any point, at any time, if I felt it was right. But I was hoping to be able to trap this player that I had position on that was sitting to my right because I was below average chips, and I needed to make something happen. So he makes a raise. Are you with me so far?
Yep.
Okay, he makes a raise, and I look down at two queens, two red queens. And now I decide, you know, do I want to fast play this and re-raise, knowing that he likely doesn't have anything? If I'm unlucky and he has aces or kings here, I'm going broke no matter what. I mean, with this player that's been raising and re-raising the entire tournament and is the chip leader at the time. He was unquestionably the chip leader. He had, I think, about $1 million in chips. when the average was probably 450, and I might have had, I don't know, I'd say 300, give or take. So I look at the two red queens, and I definitely do not want to fast play it and re-raise it there and take the pot down. I want to gamble. I have a big hand. It's deep. It's late in the tournament. There's really no money when it's 16 players. It was a $2,500 buy-in. It was the main event of the Venetian Deep Stack Tournament, so it was their biggest one of the bunch, and I'm very pleased I went deep in it, but it wasn't millions of dollars for first place. First was $200,000. So I want to come in, you know, really first, second, or third if I'm able to, so I want to try to gamble to win it. So I decide to slow play the queens and trap him and just smooth call, not re-raise, because I felt he would have thrown away his hand. So I just call. Everybody else had folded. I can't remember the exact positions if where I was, but it was just he and I heads up. And the flop came out nine with two diamonds. And remember, I have two queens with a queen of diamonds. So I have the redraw for a flush, and I have a redraw for a straight, and, of course, I have an over pair of queens to the flop. So it's on him. He bets the flop, about a pot-sized bet, putting pressure on me as I thought he would, whether he has a hand or doesn't. And right there, I'm thinking, do I want to raise this right now and take it down again or build a big pot, you know, if he maybe has ace-10 or something? I decide to do it. It's a little bit of a move that I have, Paul. I try to show sincere weakness. I really enjoyed listening to Jamie, how he said he likes to read players and that's his edge. I feel I may not be as good as Jamie in that department, but I feel that's my edge, is reading players and, you know, maybe faking some weakness and getting people to induce bluffing into me. So I did about two or three different things where I try to show a little bit of weakness and do just the right amount, because if you overdo it, you know, good players are going to figure that out as well. So I just call at this point. And again, are you with me with all this, Paul?
Yeah.
Okay. So I just call there, and the turn comes a king of diamonds. So now there's three diamonds out there and an overcard now to my queen, which I don't love, because he could be bluffing me with king four, and now he, you know, just got lucky on me. He could have had king five. He could have had ace king or king queen and had a real hand, and now I'm beat as well. But he fires another big bet in there, which I thought was suspicious because the diamonds are out there. And normally if somebody, you know, just had a normal type hand there, they might slow down because the flush got there and I had just called the flop, he might put me on a draw. So again, I definitely lean towards more of him being on the bluff with the chip lead. So I just call, also just call, because I have a lot of outs if I'm a beat. And he might fire again on the river if I hit. I can hit a jack for a straight. I can hit any diamond for a queen high flush. And I still believe I have the best hand. The river came a great card for me. Came a jack of clubs. So now I'm sitting there. The only hand that really beats me is a flush or ace queen, which he could have had, but I put him more on any two cards. At this point, he goes all in. But I was pretty much committed to call. I thought he made a little bit of a mistake there, and I snapped call, and fortunately, I was good. I did make, I think, one mistake there for sure. I didn't have him show his cards first. I think I got caught up in the moment. I had waited about 8 hours playing next to him. I should have definitely had him either show his cards or tell me no pair, and as good etiquette, then I could have rolled over my queens.
Right.
You know, I should have waited.
You snap-called and turned over your queens immediately.
Exactly. I snap-called, turned over my queens immediately. He mucks his hand. And, you know, I was a little excited. I definitely didn't overdo it at all, but I stepped away from the table because, you know, that was pretty much the tournament for me. And I put a lot at risk with the queens in trying to trap him and take a big chance to get chips. And in actuality, I became the ever slight chip leader at that point with 16 players left, although there were a lot of players right on my heels, probably all five guys that had 50,000 within, you know, what I had. So from there, though, I went card dead for probably about 4 hours, and the day ended, and now I am short stacked. And, you know, back to your question of how you can do it when you're short stacked, which is typically where I do seem to find myself a lot. You know, I think you just really need to find, you know, where you're at with the players, what they think of your image. If they think you're tight, then you maybe can do the opposite of that. If they look at me, I'm 40 years old, and they think, you know, I'm just a cash game player, and they're the more advanced, skilled internet players, and they put a lot of pressure on me, I might have to do more of a trapping style, which I was lucky, you know, with the queens, that my queens held up. Certainly, he could have rolled over any king. You know, my plan backfires on me, and I'm out of the tournament. You know, that spot's one where, you know, my situation did work and allowed me to, you know, come in fifth. I had wished I won it. But I think, you know, when you do get short in chips, you can't call with speculative hands. You might raise with those hands and try to take the pot down if people have fold equity. I think Dennis would agree that you really need to pay attention to people's chips, you know, and everyone that's at the table and people that haven't acted yet and what they're likely to do and what they think you're going to do and what your image is if they do have fold equity or not, and you want to try to pick up a couple of pots and steal a couple of people's limps or a couple of people's blinds.
Dennis, we've only got about a minute to go here. Tell me about your late tournament strategy when you do get short.
Well, it's a survival mode. I turn into kind of a bulldog. But I make sure that I have enough chips in front of me that if somebody's going to take me out, it's going to be painful to them. They're going to have to worry about it. I hate being extremely short-chipped, whereas people really don't give a dang and will call you with almost any two cards type deal.
Right.
I try never to allow myself to get that one. I'll try to steal. I'll try to do whatever. But those are my chips, and if they're my last few chips, you're going to have to pry them out of my hand. That's what you're going to have to do. You've got to turn into a kind of a bulldog on it. I love the way Joe plays short stacked. He's not giving himself enough credit. He plays extremely well there on it. And you just know that it's going to be a fight to get those last chips out of his hands, however you're going to try and do it.
Well, you played it great, Joe, and you're making a heck of a reputation for yourself, making that final table at the Venetian and coming in seventh at the Five Diamond a few months ago at the Bellagio. Congratulations on all that. Guys, we're all out of time. I just want to get one plug in here for one of our sponsors, and, of course, that's PokerStars. Dennis is over at the EPT, which is being put on by PokerStars. Isabel Mercier won a big event for Anti Up for Africa, a big charity event that was there. Another one of Dennis's Team Poker Stars colleagues, Elke, has set a new world record by playing 62 sit-and-goes in 1 hour. There's lots more to find out if you go to PokerStars.net. I'm Paul Harris. Dennis Phillips is in Monaco, and Joe McGowan's the poker coach. We'll meet you all back here next week, 7 o'clock, here on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. And get our podcasts on thechipleader.com.